Hey folks, I'm sitting here with Mr. Peter Krogh. Today's interview is all about organizing and archiving your precious photos. Peter's a photographer, he's a writer, and a publisher. Hey, Peter Krogh, welcome to the show.
Hey, Frederick, thanks for having me.
Hey, it's good to have you. It's good to be able to pick your brain for just, 30 minutes or so on this stuff. Like, I mean, literally, you're the guy who wrote the book on digital asset management, which is, kind of that dirty little monster we all sweep underneath the bed and address tomorrow.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And it is great to have my brain picked. Usually not very painful and always enjoyable with you.
So, no, that's going to be good. I appreciate it. Okay, so let's start there. Let's jump right in. So digital asset management, DAM, as it's called, you wrote a book called The Damn Book, Digital Asset Management. Yeah. So let's start there. So just to set the stage for how you describe it, I look at The Damn Book as it's almost like, like some religious tome or, a book like when we were growing up, like the encyclopedia, right? And it was like a book that you absolutely, if you call yourself a photographer, you should have this book in your collection, right? And you put blood, sweat, tears, DNA, and everything else into writing this thing, right?
Yeah, it was, going digital as a professional photographer around the turn of the millennium was kind of the Wild West. We didn't really know how to organize everything. We didn't know how to make our digital archives persistent and durable and resilient to the problems that would come up. And I was kind of waiting for somebody else to do it. And I looked around and I saw that the people at Adobe were looking at me as kind of the information architecture guy. And I said, okay, well, let me give it a crack. And it ended up just taking off like crazy, translated into 4 different languages, and has taken me around the world. And, I really take seriously this this role I have in helping people understand workflow and create really good, durable archives.
Yeah, I love that. When I look at that book, I just think if there was a way, like in The Matrix, to get everything in that book into my head instantly and internalize it, so, then you're superhuman when it comes to the stuff that we do, because most people... Many people, their weak link in their workflow is backing up and understanding how to systematize that flow of, I got a great shot and I'm done with it. Now, how do I have the peace of mind to know that it is safe and it's in multiple places and archived and all that? And you address all that and more in this book, right?
Yeah. And even more than that, which, that's really important. How do we build our storage systems, and how do we make sure everything's backed up? But even more than that, how do we organize our stuff so that we can find it and make use of it?
Yeah.
And, this is the promise of digital photography, is that you can have at your fingertips, in my case, 15 years of digital photography that I literally have with me everywhere I go.
Yeah.
And so I can find it by subject matter, put it together. Yesterday, my daughter, we had a party for my daughter's college graduation.
Oh,
and I was able to pull stuff from literally the day she was born up until, 2 days before the party. And that was everything from film to digital originals to stuff that's generated on mobile now.
Wow. So I want to that's what has me curious about all this stuff, because I love to talk to different photographers about their workflows and how they handle that piece, having say 15 years worth of photography accessible at a moment's notice. And there's lots of software out there. There's lots of backup services. There's lots of free services that will gladly take all your images and promise accessibility over time, and as we know, sometimes those companies change their minds about how important your images are, and suddenly they're out of business and now you're left scrambling. So just before we dive into the digitizing your photo side of it, what's the cocktail of software and you know, maybe hardware or basically software and online services that Peter Krogh uses to make sure that when you pull out your phone, you have access to everything. And if you sit down at your computer, you still have access to everything. What's the cocktail that you use?
So for me, the, you know, it starts with the fact that I have a unified archive that all of my images are heading towards, and that's a set of hard drives that's living in my studio. There's a backup set of hard drives that are identical to that that live over in my friend John's house, and that's in case I'm gone and, you know, there's a fire or a theft.
Yeah.
And then I'm cataloging everything with Lightroom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, that's, I guess we're probably up to about 750,000 images. And so those are all cataloged, some of them better keyworded than others.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the biggest part of the structure. And then I use online services for distribution, whether that's to clients or friends and family. Typically that's my photo shelter account. And, that's how I can deliver jobs and make images accessible to people. And, the other thing that I've been really enjoying recently is Lightroom Mobile, because not only can you make the pictures look great on your phone, but it bounces it straight into your main archive living back in the studio. So I have this one unified place. And this is a big problem with a lot of people, that they've got all their phone stuff.
Yeah.
And it's becoming increasingly important and increasingly a part of your life, but it's separate. And having that all together is really great to be able to make the most of your pictures and put them together in really interesting ways.
So when you're out and about and you're shooting stuff, pictures of your kids, or you're at the graduation ceremony and you're taking pictures with your iPhone, presumably those photos they're going into Lightroom and the they're going into the camera roll on your phone, but you're shooting with Lightroom Mobile, the Lightroom Mobile app, or are you shooting with the iPhone app and then importing into Lightroom Mobile, which then bounces them up to the cloud?
Right. I have Lightroom set to take everything from the camera roll and push it up into my archive.
Okay.
And so I know that everything is going to go up into the main catalog. And then I can sort it there. There's some garbage I throw out.
Sure.
Good stuff I want to keep available.
And that's a push, right? That's not a live sync. In other words, if you delete things off of, you get back to your computer and there's your phone archive and you're like, oh, there's a picture of my foot, I don't need that. You delete those. Those changes don't ripple back to the mobile device, correct?
Yeah. The archive it doesn't delete it from the camera roll, mm-hmm. but it would delete it from Lightroom Mobile.
Okay.
But the governing structure is really the catalog.
Okay.
In the Lightroom catalog living on my computer. And the other thing that's cool about that is that I can push images from my catalog, favorite pictures, you know, recent trips or recent projects. I can push those to my phone. So I always have an updated portfolio and, you know, oh, look, we led a workshop in Mexico and here's some really cool pictures from Mexico.
Yep.
And I have those with me because I can push to my phone. It lets you go both directions.
That's cool. And then you can still use third-party apps like, say, Snapseed or something like that, and because those are going to drop the final photo directly back into the camera roll, which then Lightroom Mobile is watching, and it'll snatch those new photos up and put them into the Lightroom catalog, i.e. the workflow, correct?
Yep. There you go.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay.
All right.
Need to know that. So. All right. So digitizing your photos, which is what we're here to talk about today, is your latest endeavor. And this is more of, again, diving into places where people generally don't want to go that much because of for fear, uncertainty, and doubt, right? So tell me about this book and why you wrote it.
Yeah. So the issue is that lots of people have physical photo collections, whether that's negatives or slides or big transparencies or prints, and once you get into a digital workflow, you really want to have all that stuff digitized.
Mm-hmm.
Conventional scanners are not only stopping manufacture, you know, there's a lot of the people who had been in it, like Nikon, are out of the market now, but scanning, it sucks. There's kind of no other way to say it. Like sitting next to that scanner and just waiting for it to do a pass so you can, you know, and you have to pay attention. It takes forever. And
it's like shucking corn on the porch and down south, you know.
Corn's okay because you're, you know, typically have a beverage with you, and
exactly,
and it's, you know, a nice day out on the porch. Now you know, if you had to like pull one piece of the corn husk off and then wait for 15 minutes to pull the next one, that's scanning.
Okay, I got it. Perfect.
So, in the last decade or so, a lot of the cultural heritage institutions, museums and such, have started going to digital cameras as their primary method of digitizing film, prints, books, documents. Mm-hmm. And they're really good. It works really well. But it's not all that well known. It's something that I've been doing. The first time I tried it with a digital camera was late 90s, something like that. And you know, as cameras have gotten better and better, the resulting images now are as good as most dedicated scanners, but you can do it at maybe 10 times to 100 times as fast, depending on what you're comparing it to.
Yeah.
So the quality's great, the speed's great, and the workflow with the same workflow tools we use for our digital photography is really familiar, and it becomes an easy way to kind of unify the whole collection.
Yeah.
So last.
So basically, and in some ways, like me, for example, having shot film back in the day, I have a very distinct memory and, let's say, hatred for scanning stuff on a copy stand and all that, because it would never come out exactly right, and it took so much effort and time to get it right and get rid of the highlights and all that stuff. It sounds like you're saying digital technology has caught up to us and made that process a little bit easier?
Significantly easier. I mean, it really is a raw photography workflow where you're capturing all of this color and tonal information, gives you a tremendous amount of latitude to push color around, to open up shadows, to recover highlights, to change bad color balance, and the, you know, the sliders in Lightroom, or, you know, Lightroom is what I advocate, but
yeah.
The sliders in Lightroom make it really easy to do that. And what you know, you and I know that we both struggled back when we were doing film duping,
yep,
to try and get those film dupes to look good. That, you know, it's a whole different thing. This is just scan as many as you can. And back in about, I think it was 2006, I had an assistant in the studio shoot 40,000 images from my walking around camera. I always had a camera on my shoulder with a black and white film in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a ton of this stuff scanned, and I've been doing this for a long time, but now with this book, what I've done is to actually make everything really systematic and tell you how you can do you know, all of the parts of the process and put the whole thing together. How do you make sure the camera's parallel, and how do you judge your exposure, and you know, what does workflow actually look like?
That's great. That's great. And like I said, it's much needed, because when I was doing it, just felt like there were obvious rules, like make sure your camera, your the film, I was going to say sensor, but make sure the film plane is on the same plane as your art, and make sure your lighting is at a 45 degree angle, and those sorts of rudimentary things. But it was all, that seemed common sense, but there are tricks, like add a polarizer to get rid of glare and all these different things that you could employ, that if you weren't that savvy about what you were doing, you'd basically be wasting your time. Right?
Yeah. And well, and even, you know, I had the same, you know, I knew that you needed to keep the camera parallel,
mm-hmm,
but what I hadn't figured out at that point is how you can use a mirror to do that really quickly and easily.
And so I had no idea about this.
You put a mirror down on your print or on your slide holder. And then when you look through the camera, the center of the lens should be in the center of the frame. And if it's not, you have to adjust your camera to make it parallel. Mm-hmm. And so that tells you just right off the bat, we're going to either confirm that we're parallel, or we know that we have to, you know, rock it one way or the other. And then once you're done with that, then you know, okay, I'm not worrying about that for the whole rest of the copy session.
Yeah. See, that right there probably would have saved me about maybe 3 weeks of my life. That one.
Yeah. Well, so, literally. The thing that happened last fall is that we moved my dad out of his house. Mm-hmm. And we had this gigantic collection of photos that go back to daguerreotypes, go up through glass plates, and a ton of slides starting in the 50s, and color neg, and all of this stuff. So I had this giant collection of images to use, of actual physical photos, to use as the case study for the entire book. And so that's what we did. We digitized all of this stuff. I had, you know, the other stuff I digitized earlier, and my own professional work is part of this whole discussion. But sure. But having this gigantic collection of so many different kinds of images was a really great way to show the entire process.
That's cool. That's cool. And I think many of us out there in the world, myself included, as photographers in the family, we get dubbed as the image or the family archivist for all the, you know, all the old stuff. And that was me. My dad dropped a bunch of boxes on me that yep. had, you know, slide film, 35 millimeter prints in various stages of disrepair, 8 millimeter movies, VHS, mini DV, all that stuff, you know. So now I get the box, and then the question becomes, okay, what do I do with this? I can either push it off into the corner and deal with it later, pass it on down the line when I get too old to deal with it, or take care of it. And the path of least resistance, Peter, seems to be there are these companies out there that say, hey, dude, just send us that box, you know, we'll take care of it, and a couple of weeks later, we'll send you a login, and all that stuff will be online for you, right? They play that kind of Pied Piper siren song of, okay, hey, I could be lazy and just send them some money in the box, and they'll take care of it. What are your thoughts on those kinds of services?
So I think that for a lot of people, that's awesome. You know, send it off to one of those services, they'll do it for you. And if you have... if you don't have any other options, that's what you do. But there's also a lot of people, and I'm assuming a lot of your listeners and your community, that have the photographic skills to do the digitization themselves.
Yeah.
And the advantage to doing what I'm suggesting for those people who own a good digital camera and know how to follow a recipe is that you're going to end up with scans at a fraction of the cost of one of those services, and you're not going to have to be sending it off somewhere.
Right.
And a big advantage for having the scans done at a really low price is that you can just scan everything. Mm-hmm. I know many a scanning project that has foundered on the rocks of, okay, I'm going to start pulling these things out and hunch over a light table and try and choose which ones to scan, and mm-hmm. it's a buck a piece, and, you know, I don't want to spend more than, you know, $500 or $1,000 or something yep. like that.
Yep.
And then you get an hour or two or three into choosing slides, and it's just a mess. And
you give up.
Just back in the box, back in the corner, yep. and you don't pick it back up again until you have to.
Yeah.
So what I'm advocating really is that if you have those skills, and oftentimes if you have somebody else who's in your family, or you can hire somebody at a reasonable rate, you can get all of this done at a mere fraction of the cost of sending it out, and you get a really high quality scan.
Yeah, and you remove the risk of, you know, either the carrier or the service losing that box of irreplaceable images and send you $100 as restitution, right? So
yeah, he's going to insure you for what it's worth to you.
No, it's priceless. Yeah, and you hit it right on the head too. Like when I'm looking through because I'm the youngest in the family of five kids. So when I look through that box, I'm seeing images of people I have no idea who they are. Are they important? Should I care? You know. You know, and you have to make those, I feel unqualified to make those decisions, you know, on what needs to be scanned. As a result, scan everything, just get it all in there and, you know, then be done with it. Right. And that's what you're advocating.
Absolutely. And, you know, it depends on what kind of a collection you have. You know, if I were to, when I next, you know, the next whack I take at my transparency archive is there's hundreds of thousands of transparencies, a lot from assignments, a lot are near frames and and outtakes and, you know, exposure brackets or something like that. I'll whittle those down, but I'll whittle it down to, you know, 10,000 pictures or something like that. And so, but if you're somebody who's sitting on a family archive and there's, you know, a couple of thousand prints, maybe a couple of hundred rolls of film, then just blasting through the whole thing and getting it all, get it all in. And then it really is like magic. You know, the, for me, the experience here was that, there was a ton of stuff I knew about my family, but I'd never seen it, you know, and as a photographer, we're all visual people. There's a huge difference between, I see what my great, great uncle looked like as a young man. And I see him, you know, in New York City in the 20s. And so he's not, you know, great uncle in that case. I'd never met the guy. He died long before I was born, but he was looked like a really cool guy. And so I was able to see that stuff. And, you know, all of those pictures were there. I could have leafed through the albums. I could have gone through the envelopes and the boxes and all of that. But, you know, there's, it's hard to do that with physical pictures, and it's hard to come back. You know, you find something cool that you like, well, okay, do I take it out of this box? Do I put it over there? You know, if the whole thing's in a Lightroom catalog, you put, you know, four stars on it and you immediately just find those good ones.
Yeah, that's a good point. So with sort of the, you know, facial recognition algorithms that are built into Lightroom, suddenly those become really important as you're scanning these, because you might see, I'm guessing you'll see an image of some kid and not know who it is, but then Lightroom may know that, yeah, that kid is actually your great-grandfather and put him, and so put him together.
I was pretty surprised. I have not been a real user of Lightroom's face recognition tool. It's just been easier for me to add keywords according to people's names. But I did find that there's something about scanned photo collections that where that works really well. And there's, I think there's a couple of things that are happening. One is that you often will have the same people over time. And it turns out that guessing that it can do about who is who is pretty good. And so that that helps, you know, and it literally, after being trained, it can now pick out my father as a baby and as a, you know, 82-year-old guy.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
It's magic. Yeah. Okay. The so I want to talk a little about who this is for, right? So in the context is there, we talked about those online services that kind of take the pain away. You send them a box and some money and they take care of it for you. But then even coming down from that, we have iPhones these days and Android phones with software. I know in, what is it, the upcoming iOS 11 and the iPhone 8, they're supposed to have implemented a feature, I think, that Dropbox and apps like Office Lens have had forever, which basically turns your phone into a scanner and will, in, you know, in augmented VR, overlay a rectangle over the thing that you're trying to scan. You take the picture, it'll do its automatic perspective correction and contrast adjustment and throw it in your camera roll for you. So the devil's advocate question is, why not just do that? Why not just, instead of setting up an elaborate copy stand and the DSLR and all that, why not just use my iPhone? You know, I paid $800 for it. Why not just use that thing?
Yeah, well, you know, I've done that very same thing. And Google has a pretty cool app that does that. And when you're, you know, when I'm over at somebody's house and I see a family picture, you know, there's a family picture somewhere and they're not going to let me have it, then, and all I got is the phone, absolutely shoot with the phone.
Yeah. And museums. Woo.
Well, there's a lot of cool stuff happening there with augmented reality. It's, that's another discussion.
I know.
You know, there's, So the phones do a really good job. And if it's for one-offs, that makes a lot of sense. And if you don't have a digital camera other than your phone, then that's be a good one to use. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole lot of people now who have picked up photography as an important hobby and an important part of how they do self-expression, and they're buying good cameras. And there's a ton of really good DSLRs out there and mirrorless cameras. Yeah. And so lots and lots of people already own most of what they need to make this work.
Yeah.
And if you're going to go through the pain and the hassle of pulling everything out and just running it all through one by one, you might as well be getting as good a scan as you possibly can.
Yeah. Because ideally, you only have to do this one time, right? Think of it that way. This is a one-time event, and then presumably that image will go back in the box. Oh, that was another question I forgot to ask you is, I'm going to transition sort of into just what the practical flow is. What does it look like when you're scanning these? But when you're done, jumping to the end, you're done, you got that, you had the box on the left side of your copy stand and the incoming box on the right side, and that incoming box is full now and the outgoing box is empty. What do you do with those images, the physical atom-based imagery? How do you protect that? Because those are the priceless originals, right? And you want to forget about them, but then you don't want to forget about them. What do you do with them?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things there, and I write about this in the book because it was an important part of what we were doing. So the first thing is that as we were reviewing the material to begin with, we took everything that we thought somebody might want as a print mm-hmm. in the family to put in a frame, or it was already framed and they might, you know, put it on their wall. And we had a bunch of different people in the family who were interested in different images.
Sure.
We put those in a special group, either a box for just prints or, you know, a big stack for the framed prints mm-hmm. and said, okay, these are going to be distributed. So once we shot those got to be distributed. And at that point we have a really good digital version of the picture so that everybody can have a copy and really everybody could make their own print if they wanted to. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing, is that it enables you to actually put the prints in everybody's hands, everybody who wants them. And that's a really high value part of the process. And then the other part was that we took the opportunity to put everything in archival storage. And I outlined, you know, what you can buy for that and how you want to name your boxes and how you want to know that what's in this box is in this folder. And then those can be put away in a way that lets you preserve the original document, the original photograph, without needing to have it be done in a way that provides access.
Yeah.
You know, the access is really to the digital image unless you really need to go back and find that print.
Yeah.
So it allows you to do a better job preserving the original photo artifact.
Yeah.
Because you're not also having to make it available.
They no longer need to be touched, yeah.
Yeah, and so getting that put away, and, you know, there's a lot of people have their stuff stored in non-archival boxes, and so this is an awesome time to, order some acid-free boxes from Printfile or whomever, and some poly bags, and bag stuff up. And so not only can you do distribution, but then you can put the stuff away and really make sure that it's preserved. So that's a really important part of the process.
And you just keep in mind that the work that you're doing right now, if you get in your time machine, your great-great-grandson who's now, middle-aged is opening up that box and getting teary-eyed at great-granddad right there.
Yeah, and, we've had this separation from when photography was primarily film and print. There's still some people doing it, and I love to see young people doing this. But because we've had this time and we now all think of images as these digital images, there's something really magical and cool about going back and picking up that print and knowing that that was, made in 1903 or whatever, that this thing has been sitting, we've held on to this for 109 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And
And just to know that someone else, that someone, the people in that photo have looked at that same thing that you're holding and maybe even held that thing that you're holding versus, you know, clicking, double clicking a file and looking at zeros and ones.
Yeah. And so I think it really adds value to the old artifact. And then the other thing that has been a huge part of this is getting stories and information, in this case from my father, mm-hmm. who knows about, you know, a lot of these people, some of them he doesn't know about, and being able to attach that to the digital image.
Yeah.
So there's annotations and groupings and tagging for name and tagging for place that would really be impossible to do to, you know, every slide
sure.
in the collection. But we can grab 50 slides and drop it on a you know, a location name, for instance, and then we know, okay, these were all shot at Hoban Road in Northwest Washington, and so it's a way to discover and to preserve and to aggregate all that information that you have.
Yeah, no question. Digital has a mountain of benefits over analog, but there's still the romanticism of the tactile print, you know, and the history and the ghosts that are attached to that physical piece of media.
I absolutely felt like I was seeing ghosts.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it was, and even the ghosts of my own past, you know, what I looked like in high school or college. I've been a photographer for a long, long time and have a ton of film from back then.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. As I go through those boxes, I get the same kind of weird feeling like, geez. And then you start, when you look at old pictures of yourself and you remember what was going through your mind back then, you're like, wow, you know, either I was insane or I was so alive back then.
It's a double-edged sword. There's definitely some risk of going down the rabbit hole.
Oh, look at my hairline. Oh my God.
I wasn't so fat back then.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't great. So I wanted to close this off and just have a little bit of discussion about the physical workflow. So people pick up Digitizing Your Photos, the book, and, you know, I know in the book, and I'll, you know, we'll have photos of the setups and all that stuff, and they may have seen some as we've been playing this video, but we'll post everything in the blog post for this. But what I'm curious about is, what does the physical setup look like? How much space in my house do I need to allocate for this? And when once it's set up, do I like set a window of time? Like every day from 7 p.m. to 8:30, I'm going to go sit down, put my headphones on, and eat a bite out of this elephant, right? What's the flow?
And so first thing, physical apparatus, the heart of it really is mostly going to be a copy stand.
Okay.
And there's a ton of copy stands available that have a pretty small footprint. You know, maybe they're 20 inches wide, 24 inches wide, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then you can get them with lamps that attach to it. So you don't have to have big light stands out on the floor with soft boxes. And so it can be a pretty modest space footprint that's for reflected, prints. Mm-hmm. And then you can also use a light table and a negative carrier as something that allows you to re-photograph film and slides and transparencies.
Sure.
There's a couple other variations I go into in the book, but that's probably going to be the most common.
Cool.
So workflow, my own preferred method on this is get set up and hire somebody else to do. Hire a careful person mm-hmm. to come in and do the work.
Yeah, yeah.
And for family copy work, it's really common for there to be somebody in the family who, you know, might be looking for some extra money, or, you know, a young person somewhere who wants to do it, or a retired person who wants
anybody with a good amount of time on their hands, contiguous, right? That can sit down and concentrate and just blow through it one chunk at a time, right?
Yeah, and it does, the the biggest efficiency gain is to not have to set up and break down. Mm-hmm. So if you can get everything set up and then just blast through stuff, if you can leave the setup exactly as it is, then you really could, you know, eat it a chunk at a time, do, you know, do 2 hours a day, something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
And you can get an awful lot done in 2 hours. If you're, you know, if everything's set up, it's turn it on and just start shooting.
And you hit your flow, throw on some Spotify and just rock through it. Right.
That is pretty much it. And my daughter did the work for me for my family archive. And she also was involved in the book. She was on camera and she also did video editing. There's 9 hours of video in the book.
Oh, wow. So okay.
It actually shows the whole process from start to finish. So you're not reading it and imagining what it looks like. It's like, oh, here's a video of her actually shooting those slides. And, you know, here's her showing the apparatus that you copy with. But yeah, it's blast through it and then do some, I set up a workflow. So, you know, there's certain things that you want to do at the same time. If you're shooting, say, black and white negatives, you probably want to put a crop on it. If mm-hmm. the camera's probably not exactly cropping, so you can, you know, do a crop in Lightroom and paste it across the entire set of images. You can turn them all positive, and roll by roll, they typically need the same curve and exposure adjustment. And so you do that, and then once you've got a nice, what I call proofing copy, something where you can see the image, see how much you like it, what's the subject matter, then you can do some tagging. And then once you got your tagging done, some basic tagging, then start to put stuff together in ways that makes you happy. You know, I made a wonderful book. One of the first things I did was make this wonderful little book about my grandmother. And I had pictures from her from like 1890 up to, you know, when she died in like 1992.
Wow.
And was it in 98, something. From 98 to 92, she was like 93 or 94 years old when she died. Wow. And she, her life was really well documented. And there was all different media. And to be able to put that all in one place. So the curation step that sits at the very top of this is where things get really fun and interesting. And you share with other people and in the family and get them to tell you what they know about the people and the events.
Oh, good. You included, I was going to ask you about that. That's great. Because like I mentioned before, you know, having a box of images and not really knowing who everyone is in there, you need to tap into that historical knowledge in the family from people who know who, oh yeah, that's Aunt Bunny over there. Yeah. So you could help caption these images of people that you may not necessarily have known. Correct.
Yeah, and I'm there's some kludges to be able to publish it up online from Lightroom and have people annotate it from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that we'll see something that is less kludgy and more just like built for that.
Yeah.
At the moment, what we're doing is, you know, family members will come over and we'll sit down in front of the computer and, you know, they just get totally lost in the rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah. I imagine it becomes a family affair at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be lovely to be able to publish a gallery of images up to the web, maybe password it and give someone access, like maybe give my dad access so he can log in and write captions and have those captions come back down to my library. Right. So. Yeah.
There's ways to do that with SmugMug. It's not exactly, it's not quite designed for this, which seems like a thing they would do,
mm-hmm.
given the, you know, the rest of the technology they
SmugMug
have there.
SmugMug is probably more designed for wedding comments from brides on the images, right? That kind of thing, or
yeah. Although I think there's, you know, there's a whole lot of people who use SmugMug for a lot of different things,
and Yeah.
You know, this would be an excellent, you know, I looked at a couple of different services and I was pretty happy with what I got with SmugMug. One of the things they have is a tag cloud. Oh. So, you can set that up on any page for any collection of photos.
Yeah.
So if you have people named, you see that in the tag cloud. And so you don't have to be looking at it and saying, oh, I wonder if there's a picture of, you know, Carol Stewart in here. You can just see, oh, there's Carol Stewart. Oh, I didn't realize there were pictures of her.
That's cool. You know,
just click it and all of those come up. So that's a really useful tool for letting people discover what's in the collection. Yeah. And that's an important part of it, is like, what the heck is even here? Somebody's not really familiar with what everything is that's in there, then it's great to be able to sort of present that to them.
Yeah. Do you have any specific services that you recommend in the book for people to use for cloud-based? SmugMug, or is there a suite of them?
So in the last chapter, I show how to integrate Lightroom with SmugMug. Mm-hmm. Also, and that's an awesome use case, particularly for a family archive.
Okay.
And then I also show how you can integrate with PhotoShelter Libris, which is PhotoShelter's corporate library product.
Got it.
And so that would be better for, you know, if you're digitizing a company's photos or an institution's photos, you need to have a greater layer of permission capability and mm-hmm. protection that SmugMug isn't really built for.
Yeah.
But I also show in the book how you can publish to Lightroom Mobile or Lightroom Web.
Mm-hmm.
And those are, you know, they're not quite there yet, but mobile I like. The Lightroom Web product isn't quite there yet, but they're working on it. And I believe they will probably get there one of these days.
Yeah, Josh is over there crafting it as we speak, right?
Absolutely. And you know, that might be the first place where you get a really good integration of being able to type a caption in the web mm-hmm. and then have migrate back to your Lightroom catalog. So that's a thing that I show, and I show it in video form, how you make that work.
Cool.
As well as how you can take those images and publish them out to Facebook or to Instagram, which is a great thing that people want to share this stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, the book itself, I want to talk about the format, because you mentioned that there's many, many hours of video in there. So I want to talk about the form of the book. Before we do that, so the formats in particular that the book covers in terms of digitization, what are you covering? In other words, are you covering 8mm, or are we looking at just still imagery right now? Or
It's all still imagery as well as documents.
Okay.
And really the revolutionary thing here is that digital cameras that are in the hands of literally millions of people are good enough to use as scanners. And if you just follow the right recipe, you can get great scans out of that and at a really high speed. And that's really the transformational thing that's here. There isn't the same kind of process available for video and for, yeah. You know, 8mm film. You really need to send those off to services.
Okay.
So that's what it covers. I do also cover how to shoot books. One of the things that I found was some really great scrapbooks. And it's kind of like scrapbooks were like the internet bookmarks of the, in this case, these were like 1920s, 30s, and 40s.
Yeah.
So if you ran across an article and you liked that article, or it was about a friend, or it was relevant to you in some way, mm-hmm. what I'm seeing in my family, you know, broadly based across lots of different members of the family, is they would make a scrapbook. They'd cut out the article, and they put it in. And it would be, you know, here's Uncle So-and-so, or here's an event I was interested in. And so you can learn this tremendous amount about people by looking at these scrapbooks and being able to copy those and drop those into the archive, gives you the ability to learn all that stuff later and kind of put two and two together of, oh, well, this person was really interested in, you know, the suffragette movement in the 19-teens.
Yeah.
And oh, here's some interesting pictures of her probably as a suffragette.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's data mining your life, basically, right?
Yeah. Well, history.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
You know, and if, you know, I'd love to see a better integration with something like Ancestry.
Mm, oh, right.
You know, this is a thing I'm, you know, hoping to see some kind of movement on this where you could easily push this stuff or identify it with the person name in Ancestry and be able to say like, oh, okay, this is, now we have this person and, you know, at all these different ages and,
yeah, maybe that's the solution where you have Ancestry.com and kind of the, you know, with a Wikipedia flavor to it where, yeah, you know, people can go in and edit and upload photos. If they know more about a certain person, you can add more detail to that person with a variety of media.
Yeah. And as you know, Lightroom is really extensible and can be connected onto different services. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing really stopping it. It just, the wiring hasn't been put together yet. And I think partially because people didn't realize how, you know, how good this process is and how much you can get digitized.
Yeah. So as we wrap this up, let's talk about the format that the book comes in. Like I said, yeah, before, you mentioned that there's a lot of video. It's not just you're not just going to get an ebook when you purchase this thing, right? What's the format it takes?
So, I mean, it really is probably more accurately described as a very comprehensive video course.
Okay.
That comes with a book, and it's just that you can launch the videos by clicking on the video in the PDF, and it launches the video.
Very cool.
So there's 90 videos for a total of 9 hours, and this is a format that we've been working with since 2013 was the first book we published in this method. And it's been really, really popular because, you know, books are great for laying out general principles, but really a terrible user experience to try and learn workflow.
Yeah.
It's like you got 10 steps and then really the only way to do it is to like get it baked into your, you know, visually baked into your understanding. You got to have the computer open,
yeah,
and you're saying, oh, which menu item? And then to there. And
yeah, and you have the book here and you put your little yellow stickies in the book and go back here. And yeah.
As opposed to, I'm going to tell you how this thing ought to work and click the movie and then it pops up and you actually see it in action.
Yeah.
And we're hearing from readers, they just love this. It, you know, really makes sense to divide like principles from workflow. And so that's, you know, it's 248 pages and something like 90 videos for 9 hours of video. And if, you know, if you don't have color negatives, you don't need to read the chapter on color negatives. Yeah. It's not that you have to, you know, see all 9 hours, but I really wanted to be comprehensive on the whole process.
And is it a purchase and download the video and go through them at your own pace, or do you purchase access and get a username and password?
It is purchase and download. We also sell, we're selling it on USB. The last multimedia books that we created, we also sold on DVD. And then I was researching something and I looked and I saw, oh, Apple hasn't included a DVD player since 2012.
Nope. No, in fact, I have a super drive that's in a drawer somewhere. So if I happen to get media that I need to stick in the computer, I'll go dig that thing out and plug it in.
Yeah. Primarily people just do direct download and that's fine. But we do sell also to people who are in bandwidth impaired areas.
Yeah.
And some people just like to have a thing and, you know, a physical thing in their possession.
Yeah.
Or having made their purchase. So we're selling those as well.
That's cool. And what's the price? What's the price of the book?
Download is $35, $34.95.
$35 for 9 hours and 200 some odd pages of how to get your life together.
Yep. It's the other authors I talk to tell me it's too cheap. But
yeah, I would have honestly, I mean, thank you for making it that price. I was kind of expecting either roughly around double that or maybe even 99 somewhere in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, the damn book sold extremely well. And when we started our publishing company, the fact that my wife and I run the thing, we have a great production person who lives in Laos right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're able to do things at a very good price, and we want to, you know, our objective is to get as many of these things out there as possible.
Fantastic.
We
really
want, we want the message out there. We want people preserving their images.
All right. Well, Peter Krogh, we'll leave it right there. Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to hang out with you.
Likewise. All right. You have a good rest of your week.
Okay. You too. See ya.
Okay. See ya.